We are the space robots. We are here to protect you. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pusher Robot.
And this is the Shover Robot.
And we're here to protect you
from the terrible secret of space.
And we are finally being able to say that at the same time. It's not over Skype because we are together at last for the New Worlds 2016 conference here in Austin, Texas.
Absolutely. And this has been a really great experience. The past 2 days, we've covered topics all the way from lunar orbital refining all the way down to sex and space. Definitely a wide myriad of topics and quite enjoyable, might I say.
Yep. But even more enjoyable is we actually have guests, a rare occurrence on this show. First of all, we got Keegan Kirkpatrick. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Beard.
No problem at all. I went to college with these two guys over at ERAL Prescott, and after I got out, I went to work for a little company called Mazin Space Systems for a little while, stomping around the dirt launching rockets. After that was said and done, I put together a little team that competed in NASA's 3D print habitat challenge, and we managed to make it to the finals. And now I'm kind of building a company out of it. And what we do is creating new technologies to be able to 3D print and design homes on Mars entirely on site, and hopefully pretty soon do the same thing on Earth.
That's outstanding, Keegan. And now for our second guest here, we've got Patrick Donovan. Patrick, what's your story?
All right, guys. So I'm the odd one out here. I did not go to college with these three gentlemen. In fact, I had to bump into them on separate occasions at this wonderful conference. As for myself, I'm a 2015 UCLA graduate who ended up selling a design to Mars in exchange for an undisclosed lump sum of money and a little bit of recognition. I ended up twirling that into an opportunity to speak at this conference. Now, I did not go home with a $500 check like Mr. Keegan Kirkpatrick, but I have made some great friends and met some cool people and some other ones too, and I am now here on this show.
Which is, you know, a dubious place to be compared to the other merits, but, you know, such as it is. I hope that's still, yeah, that's still recording. All right, we're working on unfamiliar technology. It's kind of a fun thing. Okay, so in lieu of any, like, you know, super formal script like we usually have when we're going through this kind of thing, that's kind of a joke, we're going to talk a little bit about what we're all doing here at this conference. So New Worlds 2016 was basically your average space conference where a bunch of people get together and they talk about space and they talk about what they want to do in space, and a lot of more people have good qualifications for being here. Me and Trevor are not quite in that thing, because we basically do this and we talk about space at other places.
It's more of a hobby for us, but we're talking professionals now. We brought you some good information.
So this is a rare treat. But what Trevor and I were doing here during this conference, we were talking about direct metal laser sintering and its comparisons in in-situ resource fabrication in extraterrestrial space. We discussed it a little bit in previous episodes.
Yeah, I think it was like season 1, episode 2. We talked about that just a little bit. But yeah, we did a little paper presentation on that. We were invited to present our poster on it, which was an outstanding opportunity. But at the same time, definitely learned a heck of a lot more than what we came here with. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Keegan to talk about what he brought to the table today and what they're all about.
Well, I got called up a few months back by a friend of mine from the 3D Print Habitat Challenge. I won't say his name for liability reasons, but he told me about this little thing, and I maybe wrote and sent in everything with maybe 4 hours to spare when it was all said and done. And I was lucky enough to be invited in, and my topic was mainly talking about homesteading on Mars, the idea of being able to design, build, and inhabit a shelter that you can make entirely on site with no prior training in space architecture or design. And I wanted to write that out because that's kind of one of the driving philosophies behind RedWorks and my team out in California, that if we're going to colonize Mars or the moon or wherever, we can't just have it be another exploration mission, because that's not going to be sustainable for colonization. We got to open it up to everybody. That's the goal. And people seem to be receptive to that idea.
How do you propose that we use those in-situ resources? Is there something specific that that makes your method stand out, or are you like, how do you propose that we utilize Martian resources for building habitats?
If I had to say what the main thing that is unique about RedWorks technology more than anything else is that our habitat design system that we use is all derived from parametric algorithms. In English, that means that we've created a piece of software that if you input just height, width, and depth as parameters, hence parametric algorithms, the software will then generate an entire habitat from scratch. The basic idea being is that if you are on Mars, you're on Terra Incognita. If you dig down to build your habitat and the foundation doesn't go as deep as you want, you can't just be stuck with a design that can't adapt itself on the fly. Heck, if you find a particularly uncooperative rock that you can't adapt to, you've got to be able to morph around that. But the other side of that thing is being able to take advantage of natural structures. We talked about this a little bit in my actual talk, was that Mars and the Moon, much as on Earth, got these great big lava tubes, and if you can find an opening to them, which we've got some pretty solid data showing from space images of open caves and pits on the Moon and Mars, if you can find one of those, you can then use that generative algorithm to create a structure that can fit around it, source regolith from around it, that's Martian dirt for those of you who still speak English, process that into a molten malleable material and seal off that whole area. And that gives you the ability to pressurize a much larger chamber and build this little self-contained biosphere underneath the surface of Mars or the Moon.
What do you say to the critics that say that you can't pressurize a lava tube because the basalt is too too brittle and wouldn't be able to hold pressure without exploding?
That really depends on how thick the basalt walls really are, and this also is assuming that you can't reinforce it. I mean, the whole point of our system is that it's adaptive. If you're operating off of a 3D printer on Mars that can source regolith as its build material, and you're in a structure that maybe it doesn't look nearly as solid once you seal off just that one hole, you can go over with a secondary layer and build support struts or even a full encasing layer if you really want to go through the work and just basically use that open cave as your scaffolding for more than anything else. So the whole point is to be able to create an adaptive system so you're not subservient to any environmental conditions that might kick you in the teeth and leave you having to not be able to do what you originally wanted to do.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Keegan.
Very cool. Very cool. Enjoyed your talk, you know, just as much back then as I do now. All right, Patrick, you had a super interesting presentation that really, I mean, it fed into ours, so we were, like, super excited about listening to it. But please tell us about Erupt, which is a great thing.
Sure. So I'll touch on how it feeds into these gentlemen's design at the end and let them segue back into it. Erupt is an acronym that I spent 3 or 4 hours thinking about on and off in various showers, beds, and cars and traffic. It stands for Exhaust Recovery Utilization Processing Tool. And the key thing about this piece of equipment is the exhaust recovery. Now, we know that NASA wants to send this piece of equipment called MOXIE to Mars. And essentially what it is, it's a glorified compressor that takes the atmosphere, plays with it a little bit, and then takes some oxygen out of the carbon dioxide, turns it into carbon monoxide, and then spits it out. Now, the thing is, nobody's thought that the carbon monoxide was a useful resource, even though it's essentially at Earth atmospheric pressure and 800 degrees Celsius after that process. So what my equipment does is, essentially you plug a hose into the exhaust port, and keep in mind that this exhaust is already filtered for dust and other particulates because otherwise MOXIE would break down. You take that air, and then you run it upwards through this machine called a gravity separator, and mining companies across the world already use this. Essentially what it is you run either air or liquids, which aren't on Mars, so in this case air, upwards to a vibrating table, and through the magic of physics, it sorts materials by density, and you get these neat little streams of pebbles or dust or whatever floating down to different parts of the table. Now at the same time, it's this carbon monoxide exhaust, which is used in blast furnaces on Earth. If you run carbon monoxide over a rusty piece of metal, eventually you'll have a piece of metal, sans rust. Now the thing is, if you have a small specific surface area, that the ratio between the surface area of a dust grain and the mass of it, the reaction rate increases essentially linearly with the area, or exponentially with the mass of the grain itself, as it decreases. So you're running hot carbon monoxide over these tiny bits of dust, and if you could look at it without burning your eyes out, you would see this rust turning into shiny metal grains of iron, nickel, and whatever else. And So not only does it sort all the materials, but it spits out fine metallic grains straight from the Martian surface, along with essentially whatever else you want to sort out by density. Now, after you've baked the Martian soil, as we've already proven with the Phoenix lander, you also end up cooking out phosphates, water, perchlorates, you name it. You can capture that with another undisclosed system that I haven't thought up with, and that is probably patented, but we'll see. And capture that. You can take the metal fines and you can put them in a 3D printer. You can take the non-metal fines, put it in the furnace, which is attached to erupt, and heated using the exhaust, and make bricks out of it, and actually repair the furnace itself with no additives, no glue brought from Earth, nothing at all. The key thing for the two gentlemen who invited me to this podcast is now they have a supply of tiny, fine metal powder in convenient little refillable cartridges. And I'll give it back to you guys and see where you guys go with it.
You know, there's nothing we like more than little, like, refined metal powder.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little, you know, whatever. So I guess my question for you, Patrick, would be, how realistic is this thing to be deployed? Like, it looked like a compact design. I mean, we can't show the images on the podcast because it's an audio thing. And it looked like it was going to be, you know, a real tight mechanical contraption and stuff like that. Is that commonly what you see on, like, space-based, you know, manufacturing things, like having a lot of moving components, like shake table and a sifter and stuff? Mm-hmm. Are those realistic technologies for deployment in space?
So to give some numbers for you people out here who don't have the photos, the original Challenge asked for something no more than 800 kilos and 2 cubic meters. So that's essentially a really heavy refrigerator in the back of a small pickup truck, like one of those old Tacomas. And what you end up with is trying to cram a whole bunch of useful equipment into a small space. And this gentleman brought up a great point that you're putting a shake table, you're putting a compressor, you're putting all this hot carbon monoxide and a furnace all in the same space. Now, I was skeptical as well. So in SketchUp, thank Google for open source software.
Oh, yeah.
I built a 3D model, crude but 3D, to make sure that I could actually fit all these things in. And that includes an auger to move things around, the shake table, the motor, the vents, you name it. So theoretically, it can fit in this box. The sticking point is it is pretty small. I mean, it sifts 90 kilos of regolith at a time, which is maybe like a rectangle of dirt about as wide as a fat person, about halfway up to their waist.
I like the description.
Yeah.
So to give you perspective about like how much dirt you're sifting with this truckload of equipment at a time. So the sticking point will be, how useful is it to have something this small when people usually dream on grander scales? But we'll see.
Well, the way I like to look at it is what you proposed is something that will be instrumental for tooling on Mars more than anything else. We're trying to, you know, figure out a way to be able to pave roads and build the basic guts of houses, but it's his stuff that's going to make it possible to do everything else that comes after that. And that's going to be something that you don't need to really go too crazy on the scale at the start anyway.
That's true.
Absolutely. And something also that's interesting that I noticed about both of you gentlemen is that your projects initially started as a NASA competition. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yep.
That and a general brain fart of this sounded fun.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was the sole amount of thought that went into the start of this thing. It's like, this looks like fun.
Well, that's mm-hmm. That's pretty much how Pusher and I got here. It just sounded kind of like a good idea.
Yeah, pretty much.
But that's pretty incredible that how NASA, you know, through these extra programs that are probably not funded to the highest capacity, but they're still, you know, placing importance on them, has in this aspect spun off two completely different ideas that are going to go long ways towards making Mars or the Moon, or even applied terrestrially, a better place to live or an easier place to live. And I just mm-hmm. think that's amazing.
Well, it's also kind of worth noting is that NASA is really going all in on the public-private partnership side of things. And the first stage of the 3D Print Habitat Challenge had some minor hiccups to it, mostly because they'd had no idea the enthusiasm and the feedback was going to be so huge. There were 167 teams who entered, and America Makes were kind of administering the whole thing.
Oh, geez.
And the feedback I got from them was they had no idea it was going to be that big, and they really were working at capacity just to meet that demand. So it sounds like the next phase of the competition, they've got Bechtel, Caterpillar, and I am forgetting the name, I believe it's Bradley University, who are administering the whole thing.
Huh.
That have NASA has managed to pull them in to be able to handle this. So they brought some serious money and administrative talent behind this now.
Wow.
And the next phase of the competition is looking very impressive. We're hoping to be able to compete in that.
Nice.
It's going to be a timing and money thing more than anything else.
What are the requirements to compete in that, in the competition?
You don't have to have been a competitor or even a finalist in the previous version. You can be literally anyone and get involved in this. But the way these challenges work is it's up like a carny ride. So you've got basically 3 months from the end of registration day, which I believe is January 31st, to come up with a system that can 3D print a conical structure that can take 450 kilograms force before crush. After that, about 2 months later, I think is what it is, you've got to be able to make a beam that can go upwards of 750 of bending force, and then there's a head-to-head competition for a dome, and the rules on that are a little bit more fuzzy than what I can really pull from my own brain right now.
Well, that sounds like certainly a very good competition. Yeah.
And RedWorks is currently trying to build out a stronger and more robust team, so if you're interested in joining, come look at RedWorks3D.com.
We're useful if nothing but not plugs for other people. So, all right, we're running short on battery power more than anything else, and I know this is already going to be one of our shorter podcasts just because we want to let all of these fine gentlemen get back to their evenings because there is a party starting up soon, which is another benefit of space conferences, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. This is our first one. So
before we
kick off, just wanted to give you guys an opportunity to say anything you'd like, insights on space, insights on conferences. You know, just if you got any additional comments, now's a good time.
I would say that no formal training needed. We've all gotten here with varying degrees of success, but certainly nowhere near as many doctorates as the other people at this conference. And then keep in mind that one of the guys sitting at this table won an award despite being less than half the age of the average person here. So keep in mind that neither youth nor unemployment nor under education should be an obstacle. And to put in my own little plug, if I can find the right business card.
As he's going through his business card, because you heard it first, dream big, because you can accomplish pretty much anything you put your mind to, mm-hmm. as long as you've got the will to see it through to the end.
You'd have no idea how many important people in the industry, like rank amateurs like Shover and I, have met while at this conference. Like, it's insane.
To mention, one more thing. The secondary thing that was going on during this conference was there were about 500 high school students that were participating in a competition to design their vision of a Martian or other space habitat, and that was just impressive.
In fact, I think most of them were actually junior high students, too.
Wow,
junior
high school. That's cool.
I wish I was that motivated.
Yeah, the oldest team were in high school. And to kind of dovetail off of the point that Patrick made and what we were kind of going on already on was, not only is youth not something to, you know, consider a detriment, if anything, it'll be an advantage. I remember during my last year in college, the best team I was able to build together for a high-concept rocketry program we were putting together was made predominantly of freshmen who are coming out of high schools, who are doing stuff I would have killed to have done in college. So don't let age be anything that holds you back. And that cuts both ways, by the way. So if you're 95 and got a good idea, we want to see you down here next year.
Amen.
Yep. Cool. All right, Patrick, give us your plug.
And if you're out there and you're looking to make some money or at least get together with some other people and have no idea how to connect with other people, come to space.coop to meet a nice, flat, non-corporate feel of way to meet other equally unformally educated people who are interested in space.
Sounds like the right place for me and you, Pusher.
Yeah, and we got these guys' business cards. We'll put some information in the description for this podcast. So, and we'll be doing a more probably appropriate follow-up on this once we get back into back to our original homes and into a quieter environment where we're probably not going to run out of battery anytime soon. And after we've had time to digest, because there's a lot of high points that I think is going to influence some future episodes, especially the last dissertation on sex and space, because that was just pretty cool.
It's very fascinating.
All right. But
ins and outs.
That's about all we've got for you tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and for our distinguished guests. So I am the Pusher Robot.
And I'm the Shover Robot.
And you have gone
down the stairs.
That was sort of a haphazard clacking sound.
Thanks.